So you gave a speech on Monday at the rally where lots of students came together. Can you first tell us what was your message to the students?
Well, I thought it was important for them to hear that somebody at the university was outraged about what happened, that police violence against students, against peaceful protesters, and against bystanders is never okay, and especially horrifying on a university campus, which is supposed to be a place where you can dissent publicly and safely. And that not only do I and many other professors support the students' right to protest, I also see what's happening here as part of a global phenomenon. And so I talked a bit about that. I said, you know, the protests are happening as the euro is in crisis, as national and personal debt skyrockets, as higher education is being defunded worldwide and students are being asked to shoulder ever-increasing debt burdens themselves, where their futures are ever more uncertain. And that's not even considering the many non-economic barriers to access to higher education. And of course, you know, if you're talking about police violence on this campus, you have to consider it in the context of a heavily securitized university, which is what we've had since September. Munaka, of course, have been on strike, and the administration's response has been to get an injunction placed against them, limiting their rights of public protest, and increasing highly visible security presence on campus.
So why did you feel that you had to give this speech and that you had to take a position in this conflict?
Well, I'd already taken a position on the Munaka strike. And the position is I can't look someone in the eye who makes $40,000 a year and say, you should accept a raise that is less than the cost of living, having already done so for several years running. You know, and I was a department chair, so I actually was, I mean, you could say at the very, very, very bottom rung of university administration. I've interacted in, you know, sort of professional ways with higher administrators, but I've also spent a lot of time with my staff. I really depended upon them. I couldn't have done my job without them. And so for me, there was really no question that I had to stand with them. And so I'd been involved in stuff since the beginning of September. And really, when I saw what happened with the police, I'd left the protest by then. But when I saw what happened on YouTube and heard from people who had been there, I was just really shocked and horrified. And actually, my horror was increased by the message from the principal, which I thought accepted no responsibility and showed very little humanity towards the students. I mean, I sort of thought when that kind of thing happens on your campus, you would say, this is terrible. I'm ashamed. I'm mad. I mean, these are all the feelings I had. So I guess I'm projecting. And, you know, something really needs to be done. And that wasn't the message. The message was, you know, there were people occupying James Admin, and this might have been their fault. I mean, that's what it looked like to me. And I know the principal sent another message yesterday, but that's too little too late. So for me, I was actually, I can say, and when I was an undergraduate at the University of Minnesota, the administration actually cut the department that I was studying at the time. But I can say I've never been so angry at an institution where that employs me as I have been these past few weeks.
Okay, so what do you think, how could it happen that this conflict escalated so much?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, that's a big question. I mean, one question is how did the riot police get on campus? And I think when you already have a climate of fear, Kathy Davidson has a wonderful op-ed in the Chronicle of Higher Education that basically says, you know, administrators have a choice as to whether they make their students their enemies or not. And I think that the attitude of the university administration has been thus far quite clear. They should be concerned about student activism. You know, there were police amassing outside of campus on the Monday of the demonstration as well, which I was really disappointed to hear after the fact. So, you know, how do riot police show up? Somebody invites them. Why does somebody invite them? Because they think they should. Why does somebody think they should? Because they have learned to think of student protests as something to be afraid of, something exceptional, something dangerous.
So you took a position with Munaka and with the student protests, and I read on your blog about the activist tax, that it's not that easy for a professor. Can you explain that?
I prefaced that by saying, and this is really important, any complaints that I have are minuscule in comparison to what my colleagues in Munaka are doing right now. They're walking in circles for 4 hours a day, which is hugely boring. And, you know, not that great on your feet unless you've got nice shoes, which they may or may not have. They're making $70 a day. They're making tremendous financial and personal sacrifice. Their jobs are way more interesting than being on strike is. And I'm sure we want them back, and I'm sure they'd like to come back. So anything I say about anything I experience pales in comparison to them. And it also pales in comparison to getting pepper sprayed, tear gassed, or beaten by police. What I said about the activist tax was that it's on top of everything else. And to really do a good job of organizing, you have to be nimble. You have to be available. You have to act quickly when things happen. And this is really difficult. Professors in the humanities and social sciences often have tremendously busy and complex schedules. Most of the people I know work well over 60 or 70 hours a week. So, like, this is a very intense job already, and it's a great job. It's one of the best jobs you could possibly have. But when you add to it, okay, now there's a state of emergency on campus, and you have to react to things. You have to spend hours in the rain and cold trying to give a letter to the principal or whatever. Like, these are massive intensifications of an already intense job. You know, I had a question from a friend last weekend, you know, why are so many professors, even ones who profess progressive beliefs, apathetic? And I don't think they're apathetic. I think that many of the progressives are simply so completely overwhelmed already that it's difficult to sort of mount the energy to really go out and make a difference on top of that. But, you know, I think it's worth it. And so it's a bit of a balancing act to make sure that I'm still able to discharge the duties of my job and go out and do things like show up to rallies for 3 or 4 hours in support of students.
And you said in your speech there has been escalation in this conflict. So what has to change to make a progress here?
I'm not privy to the specifics of the strike negotiations, so I can't quite say, well, the administration needs to move on this issue and maybe the union could do this or whatever. Like, I'm just not privy to that. I mean, obviously, everything needs to be done to end the strike as soon as possible. That's the first thing. The second thing is there needs to be a real independent inquiry into what happened on November 10th. Everybody who knows Dean Jutras in the law school has said nice things about him as a human being. But the problem is that he reports to the principal, right? So writing a report that criticizes your supervisor in any kind of serious terms, you know, or maybe not her, but maybe Michael DeGrappa or someone like that, is a highly problematic thing. And so part of it is there isn't even the appearance of independence in the inquiry right now. We could wait for the administration to do that, or people could just organize their own. It's not like Jutras has any power to do anything, right? He can't compel testimony, and he can't mete out blame. So in other words, an independent investigator that simply, you know, a group of students and faculty and concerned citizens that come together could just as easily do the same investigation without the imprimatur or the terms set by the principals. Second of all, I know that there's a group, there's a student-led group, but I think it's more than just students, called the Power Rearrangers, who are really interested in looking at and restructuring university governance. And this is hugely important. I've heard Heather on the radio saying that she's never been at, you know, as consultative an institution as McGill University. And that's true. There are a lot of consultations, but the consultations are non-binding. If you look at the organizational chart for McGill University in the provost budget book, you'll see the only elected body is the Senate. And the Senate is literally in orbit in outer space around the rest of the governance structure, having no clear connection to it and having no clear position in relationship to things like the Board of Governors, the principal, and the provost in terms of making decisions about the university. The thing about democratic governance is it's difficult and it's time consuming, and people have to be really up for it. Making any changes is going to be a long-term process. It's going to be slow. It's going to be deliberate. It's going to be difficult. And, you know, sort of living with those changes is going to be a lot of work. You know, if professors really don't like how the budget's being set, well, okay, they're going to have to learn an awful lot about university budgets and how they work. It's not a simple process, and there are a lot of constraints. In fact, I often say that the sort of main condition under which a university administrator operates is constraint. And so one of the best things that people who want to organize can do is create other constraints that bump up against the existing ones for university administrators. They begin to have to make other kinds of choices when confronted with difficult decisions. And so that's one of the best things we can do.